As the elections completely revealed themselves, albeit 13 days later, it seems as though another round of elections are coming about as it relates to control of the House. And here to talk to us about that and other issues is Ron Fauché, political analyst and president of the Claris Research Group. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here, Newell.
So, Ron, as you and I were hosting the election night on November 6th, here we are on November 19th, and they're still calling races as of yesterday. I would have never imagined that this was going to be the case.
Well, you know, you did have a lot of close races, and when you have close races, you know, sometimes that happens. But, you know, one of the things that's happened to the election system around the country that people don't talk about is all of these so-called reforms, like early voting and vote by mail and you know, liberalized absentee voting, it's made all of it more difficult to actually add up the votes. And it's particularly worse in some states because they haven't adjusted to counting votes based on the more liberalized voting system. So even though, you know, it's easy to blame it on maybe incompetence or partisanship or whatever, a lot of it has to do with an election system that's really taken a lot of changes over the last decade.
And it absolutely has. And, you know, this word voter fraud gets thrown around quite a bit. But I've yet to see any examples of voter fraud yet to reveal itself, in particular in Florida as well as Georgia.
Well, you know, it's always possible that there's mistakes. It's always possible that there is some fraud. But it's very difficult to prove that. And as you say, there really is scant evidence of that. Every time there's a national controversy about voter fraud, people, you know, come up with maybe one or two examples they find, or a small number of examples they find, which really wouldn't have affected the election. I think what's happened in politics, too, is things have become so competitive, there's so much money involved that both parties are putting a lot of lawyers and poll watchers into the polls and into the counting process, where it makes it more difficult than ever to actually cast fraudulent votes.
Ron, I wanted to get your opinion about this. I mean, should it concern us as citizens that when they do the recount, they ended up with a different number every time?
Well, yeah, I mean, it should concern us because it means that one of the times it was incorrect, and that's happened, you know, over the years many, many, many times. And it should concern us, but usually it's an error. Sometimes it's a transposition error. Sometimes somebody writes something down the wrong way or whatever, and oftentimes it's not a lot of votes. But yes, all of this should concern us. More than concerning us, they should concern the elections officials, you know, the people in the local parishes and the Secretary of State's office who have to run this. They have to be ever vigilant. You know, it seems to me, you know, I remember the old days, not that long ago, when we all used to go vote in those Shoup style voting machines. Mm-hmm. And they were sort of metal and seemed like they were pretty sturdy structures. And now you go into these little booths with these little paper thin curtains around them. And it seems like every time we vote, there's a different machine or a different process. And that also causes voter error that's not fraud, where people go in and they have intentions to vote for certain candidates or propositions, and they get in there and they don't understand the ballot. So that exists too, and that's a particularly big problem in some other places in the country where they have more extensive ballot propositions that people have to vote on.
So no sooner do they count the votes and declare a winner are they now talking about being worried about this process, this election process in 2020?
Well, they certainly should be. And, you know, it's been 18 years since the 2000 presidential election where there was so much controversy in Florida. You would have thought they would have put practices into place that would have made sure that wouldn't happen. and you know, people who want to blame a partisan side for that, you know, it just doesn't cut it. You've had 20 years of Republican governors in Florida, and they haven't solved the problems, and a lot of the local officials who are Democrats haven't solved the problems. So it's not just a partisan thing. But on top of that, we also have the issue of cybersecurity. When I voted in the last election, you know, the voting official had this caucus. So they're dealing with a problem that they really haven't had to deal with before in a public way. And it will be very interesting to see what happens. I mean, my bet would probably be that Pelosi, you know, when it's all said and done, will be Speaker and she'll get the votes. But there's going to have to be some wheeling and dealing to get there.
Ron, if you would explain for our listening audience, you know, the way that this really plays out. Pelosi raised $100 million for the committee, for the Democratic Party this cycle. There is this expectation of the party, of these elected candidates, when they go into leadership roles in Congress. We think that there's this separation between party and the leadership roles in Congress, and that relationship is so symbiotic, it's inseparable, right?
Yeah, that's 100% right. And, you know, many people say that the number one job of a speaker or a House leader is to keep their majority and to get their people back in power in the next election. But one thing we have to keep in mind is that all of these House leaders and presumptive House leaders are raising tons of money. Nancy Pelosi may have raised all that money, but the next House Speaker, be it Nancy Pelosi or somebody else, will raise the money. Paul Ryan's PAC raised over $137 million. For his House members in the last election. So Steve Scalise, our congressman locally, who's member of the leadership in the House, raised a tremendous amount of money from all over the country. So whoever's going to be Speaker, they're going to be able to raise a lot of money. So just because Nancy Pelosi raised money doesn't mean she bought those votes with that money. It means, you know, she bought a level of friendship and respect with it. But people know that the next speaker, whoever that may be, can go raise the same kind of money.
Yeah, the point I was trying to make is as I talk to folks that are not really engaged politically, they really don't understand the nexus between the party and the leadership within Congress and how important that is.
Yeah, it's absolutely important because when you do not have a president, as the Democratic Party does not now have, of course, the leaders of the party are, in effect, their House leader and their Senate leader, which makes Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer the two leaders of the Democratic Party nationally, whether anybody likes that or doesn't like it. I mean, that's the case. That was the case when Obama was president, and John Boehner and Mitch McConnell were the leaders of the Republican Party. So they are not only, as you say, the leaders of their people in Congress, they're also leaders of their political parties. And they are, in effect, sort of facilitating and implementing what their parties are supposed to be standing for. And there is no daylight. There is no difference between the two of them.
So the president has come out and said that he's willing to help deliver that House, the Speaker of the House position for Nancy Pelosi. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that was a play to sort of ridicule the Democrats for being divided on this particular issue, and of course he likes to show that he can be he's a Bigfoot and he can use his influence on the Republican side and the Democratic side. So I think that was Donald Trump having fun more than anything.
Yeah. And it seems as though he relishes the thought of Nancy Pelosi holding on to being the Speaker, because he likes to have somebody to joust with, and I think she's willing to do so, and I think he's gonna love every second of it for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think that's so, but you know, depending upon who else the Democrats might elect Speaker, he'd probably enjoy jousting with them too.
Yeah.
So, In either case, whether he delivers votes for them or not, my guess is that that there's going to be a lot of jousting and a lot of fighting.
All righty. Ron Fauché, political analyst and president of the Claris Research Group. We always enjoy the time spent with you. Have a great Thanksgiving week, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Same to you. Happy Thanksgiving to our listeners.
All righty. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. On the Blue Runner opinion poll, should Nancy Pelosi be Speaker of the House again? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. This is Newell on WW. We're back, and on a Blue Runner opinion poll, should Nancy Pelosi be Speaker of the House again? And actually, 100% of the folks are saying yes. Let's go to line one. Jeffrey on the West Bank. What say you, Jeffrey?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
The answer to your question about Speaker of the House, I think people really need to consider our guy, Cedric Richmond.
Yeah.
I
was very curious whether Cedric would take on a bigger role in the leadership in the House as a result of their wins.
Nancy Pelosi seems to be entitled, like she's entitled for this position. She was once Speaker of the House. I mean, let it go. I mean, there's new leadership, there's new people, there's new ways of thinking. You have a new president. Let somebody else be Speaker of the House.
Jeffrey, let me ask you, were you surprised when she went to gender? When she said, with all of the big wins by females across the country, that the only way that they could leverage that movement would be to have a female leader, and that obviously she's that person.
I'm not surprised. This is the number one problem with the Democratic Party, because you have a sub agenda, meaning there's people who. They're really not Democrats, but they have taken over the party. And their issue is women's issue, feminist issues. It's not really any other issues, and a lot of the issues are really made up things. This one of the things that are made up is that women make 75% of what men make, and that's been proven all absolutely wrong.
Well, I think there's any number of studies out there, and depending on what industry that you're involved in, there's some that do better than others, for sure. I do believe that that's still an issue out there. But I guess what you're saying is that in the priority of issues, that's not on a national level one that would rise to the top for you.
Absolutely not.
So what is that issue?
Education.
Yeah.
Education, crime.
Yeah, and what's interesting? I don't know about you, but I probably did as much reading as anybody about all of these races across the country. I did not hardly hear education rise to the top.
Because people have they'll tell you right there. That's telling you right there. These people have their own agenda. And it's so tribalism. It's such. You look at the Democratic Party now. Just compare it to 35 years ago.
Jeffrey, you're a Democrat.
I'm an independent.
Okay.
I think it's.
Were you a Democrat before, or were you an independent all along?
Let me see. I registered to vote when I was 18. This was in 89. I was a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it is what it is.
Well, you did what your parents did, probably.
Yeah.
That's what I did, too.
I
was a Democrat. That's when I first registered.
You were.
That's what my parents were Democrats.
Well, it was mostly a Southern thing.
Mm-hmm.
Back. Up until 1970, it was mostly Southern and Northern mixture. Most Republicans were Northerners. Most Southerners were Democrats. You know what I'm saying? And then it was a mixture of other things. You know, through the city, in the cities, that's where you had your black Democrats.
Right.
In the major city. Black Republicans. I say that wrong. Because many black people were Republicans up until the 70s.
Jeff, I got to get to a break. I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 260-1870. This is Newell on WWL. On a Blue Runner opinion poll, should Nancy Pelosi be Speaker of the House again? 60% of the respondents say no. There were a number of candidates, as was pointed out by Ron Fauché, that promised that they would not be voting for her as the Speaker of the House. An interesting promise, to say the least, because what happens is that once the party starts putting the pressure on you in order to make that actually happen, when you get to D.C., you're going to receive an education of a lifetime. What you think you can accomplish as a freshman legislator and what reality is a wide chasm between the two. The likelihood of you getting a bill heard that you've actually authored is slim and none, and Slim just walked out the door. And it's going to be quite the education for many folks who have had no idea about how Congress actually works. And as was pointed out by Ron Fauché, and this is, holds true for Democrats and Republicans, so this is not a party issue. This is how it works and how it will always work unless folks really begin to effect some change. Now, there's a number of newly elected folks that are headed up to Congress that don't have that experience and are there to try and move things along in a much faster fashion, which is going to be interesting. The fact that Ocasio-Cortez would do a sit-out in Nancy Pelosi's office on environmental issue and basically talk about how they wanted to highlight this issue and put pressure on the leadership to recognize these challenges is something that's very, very different. Obviously, they went into some of their meetings with the caucus to talk about these issues. Was not as well received. Wants to create a new committee. They're trying to reach some compromise in the interim, especially for Ms. Pelosi to be able to hold on to her leadership position. And that's going back and forth at the present time. You have America's first Muslim woman in Congress, Ms. Omar, and she's breaking barriers up there as well. First Somali-American lawmaker in the country, and she's requesting certain things. Also, you have, interestingly, Texas has its two first Latinas in country, in the country from their state. Excuse me, nearly 40% Hispanic or Latino, according to the most recent census data, and one was a former state senator and the other a former Harris County commissioner that make their way up there as well. And they are requesting many things, too. And also Connecticut sends their first black woman to Congress, beating Manny Santos by 11 points, Johanna Hayes. And she has been very outspoken as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how they're able to manage any number of demands that are being made by freshman legislators up there that are coming up to Congress with an expectation set that is different than what I've seen in many, many years. So we'd love to hear from you, 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL. On the Blue Runner opinion poll, should Nancy Pelosi be Speaker of the House again? 72% of the respondents say no. I'd love to hear from you, 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. Interesting article in the Washington Post about the generational gulf between House Democrats and is shaping their leadership fight. The average age of the leadership on the House side is 70. The incoming Congress, the average age will be 59. On the Republican side, the average age of the leadership, this is the committee chairs and everyone, okay, is 50. Remember, average age of leadership on Democrats, 70. Average age of leadership Republicans, 50, because their committee chairs are subject to term limits. It's a self-imposed rule that the Republicans have. And the incoming Congress, the average age will be 57, 2 years younger than the Democrats. And interestingly enough, a 20-year differential in the leadership of the Republicans on the committee chairs and so forth. And of course, they'll be moving to vice chairs and things of that nature because they're going to be the minority party. But very different and directly related to term limits. Now, a number of, and actually their age on the Republican side went up by a year, average age from 56 to 57, and the Democrats dropped from the average age of 61 of the present Congress to 59 of the incoming Congress. Interesting on millennials, 14 new millennials come to Congress on the Democratic side, and just six in the Republicans. There was a major shift differential there on the Democrats, too, and Gen X, 29 new members in the Gen X and only 14 in the Republicans. And why this is kind of interesting is that the view from an age perspective on any number of issues is going to be different. And it presents a very different challenge for the existing leadership roles within both parties and able to find space and room and being able to tap into that energy that's coming up to D.C. And it's a very interesting article, Washington Post article. It was, I think, posted on the 16th or updated on the 16th of this month. You may want to check that out. About the age and what it's going to mean. Also, finally, as I pointed out with Ron Fauché, it is so good to finally get to the point where we're not counting votes anymore. I mean, I didn't think we would ever get there. And folks have, conceded in manners in which, I don't know, they weren't really concession speeches. There were more speeches about policy. There were more speeches about trying to draw a distinction between them and who they lost to. And I don't know, whatever happened to just pure sportsmanship where you lost. Congratulate the winner and move on. Accept it and just move on. That wasn't the case in any number of these races. Over the weekend, in case you haven't heard, they call the Florida governor's race. Ron DeSantis, the Republican there, wins. They also called the Florida governor's race. Republican Rick Scott wins. They called the Georgia race, where the governor's race there, Brian Kemp, wins. Just before the weekend, they called the races in Arizona and a number of House races, too many to talk about today, not only on some of the Eastern Seaboard races, but also the West Coast. But it seems as though, I think, pretty much, there's no one else counting.